waitress more butter.
Welcome to TerrorVision. I am Alex.
I'm Toby.
I'm Ben.
I'm also Alex, but I'll probably refer to as Horub.
The movie that we are going to be discussing tonight is Chopping Mall. Notable for a couple of things, not least of which is the fact that it launched the career of Jim Wynorski, who went on to direct quite an oeuvre, including the movies The Lusty Busty BBQ, The Devil Wears Nada, Strip for Action, Cleavage Field, The Hills Have Thighs, a particular favorite of mine, Busty Cops and the Jewel of Denial, and Busty Cops Go Hawaiian, among such classics as Dino Croc vs. Super Gator, Munchie, and Ghoulies 4. So, clearly, this is the point at which a major force in American cinema was unleashed. 1986's Chopping Mall.
You're forgetting a few important details, though. Another thing, he made Komodo vs. Cobra, which I've actually seen.
QVC.
No, it's KVC.
That too.
Komodo vs. Cobra, which I'm sorry to say does not live up to its premise. Like many straight-to-video cheap monster films, it's about 70 minutes of people talking and about 20 minutes of bad CG.
I thought it was a sci-fi original.
No, it wasn't. It was originally DVD. Also,
what is worse, directing porn or a sci-fi original? Like, what's worse for your career? What's a dark mark?
I think that they both are about even.
It's a wash.
But he also did Bad Business with a Z. That's a final note.
And speaking of not living up to expectations, I'm just going to ask all of you, was there enough chopping in Chopping Mall to satisfy any of you?
Any chopping?
There's no chopping.
There's not a single... There's sort of a jugular pinch.
It's true, there is very little chopping in the film. I mean, but it's a great title.
It's a good title, and the subhead, if you will, is where shopping can cost you an arm and a leg. And the thing is, there's no dismemberment. The killer robots in the movie feature no chopping appendages. It's kind of a letdown. You build something one way, and it doesn't deliver, and it kind of casts a pall over the entire film, in my opinion.
Anyway. I will agree that the level of violence in the film is definitely lacking, and the kills are 9 times out of 10 not satisfying. Only the exploding head is the only really good kill in the whole film. However, I will lay down and argue that I don't know if the film intends to be necessarily that kind of movie, and instead the confusing and bizarre commercial shows that it was a film with a different heart that was advertised as being a much more violent creation than it actually is.
I'll double down on the other side, Toby, and say that I think I don't know why you would name a movie Chopping Mall, give it this premise, and not have the full execution that we were all hoping for. It's not even the level of violence, it's the lack of creativity in said violence, and the lack of elements surrounding it, which I had a few notes on.
Now, in fairness to Wynorski, the movie's original title was Killbots. And had the movie been entitled Killbots, I don't think there's any argument that could be raised. Bots exist in the film, and they do kill things.
It's true. And, you know, the film does have its problems, but the fact of the matter is that any movie that has an opening title credit, Killbots created by Robert Short, is a thumbs up in my book.
The opening was awesome. The advertisements?
Yeah, it was terrific.
Woo!
And the film also stars my current big 80s movie crush, Kelly Maroney, as previously seen in Night of the Comet, and she is radiant in this picture. Very charming.
Absolutely. Just radiant. Now, let's just talk about the setup for this movie, because I think it's pretty remarkable. This film seems to exist in a world of its own, a sort of dystopian Reaganite future in which malls are so dangerous after nightfall that they have to be policed by heavily armed killer robots. Now, the security bots that they deploy at this suburban shopping mall have incredibly, just perplexingly heavy ordnance. They have laser beams. They have, like, blow torches. They have taser darts. They have lethal, toxic blowguns. They are sort of shockingly well-armed.
The best part about it wasn't to throw the shotgun. Clearly they didn't test to go, what's going to be the best way to, stop robbers? They go, no, let's just give them everything. And then we'll sort of sort it out afterwards. The robots, they looked a lot like Alpha 5 from the Power Rangers on Friends. And it always looked sort of like clunky, not in a robotic clunky. Clunky as in a bad plastic clunky.
I will say, this kind of goes back to my theorem about Chopping Mall, and I think that you guys maybe are kind of being distracted by the promise of violence and the promise of horror and the promise of, like,
chopping.
Legitimately scary robots. My argument about this film, and hopefully it'll make you guys like it as much as you should, is that the film is not attempting to be scary at any moment or have any kind of horribleness at any moment.
No.
And instead, the robots in the film are supposed to be an homage to the non-threatening, extremely cheesy and stiff horror villains of the 50s, which also relates to them, you know, the hunky nerd and Kelly Maroney, as they make out at the beginning, are watching a old 50s sci-fi horror film. And I think that's what this movie's kind of going for, in a kind of confused way, in that it's trying to give you these non-scary villains and kind of put them in a new light.
And again, we're touching on a running theme of Terror Vision, in that we have a movie which shows clips of 50s movies that's trying to emulate.
Within the film, within the framework of the film.
Yeah,
a very direct and deliberate reference. Now, my theory about the movie is a little bit different. I think it's actually a dark picture of a bleak dystopian future. Because if you look at just kind of the peripheral evidence in this scenario, you have killer robots in a basic mall that, you know, I mean, today we don't have anything more threatening than an unarmed security guard on a Segway. And in this film, you have laser shooting robots. Also, when they go to a sporting goods store in order to arm themselves to fight the robots, there are M16s and AK-47s and large caliber handguns not only available, but, like, just loaded and ready to go. So,
and having grown up in North Dakota, I really don't see what you'd find strange about that.
It's true. I mean, you say this is the future. It sounds more like the present or even the past.
I was going to say, the opening was sort of RoboCop. Like, I got, you know, they had the advertisement for it, and this is the way of the future. I was expecting a RoboCop type thing where this is a dystopian future, but I wanted them to run a little bit more.
Yeah. It's not half as subversive as RoboCop. It's much more content to kind of amuse itself.
This is like what was happening during RoboCop in the suburbs.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
This is 2.5 other movies that came out within the last decade all combined. It's RoboCop because you have the killer robots with a large corporation overarming a mechanical, you know, basically creature that's sort of humanoid to react to a Reaganite fear of a supposedly dystopian or, you know, urban lifestyle. Then you have Short Circuit, in which lightning zaps a somewhat humanoid robot on treadmills to go around and start interacting with people. In this case, lightning equals homicidal. The robots become immediately, like, obsessed with killing every living creature once lightning strikes them, a real flaw they should have tested out. And then the half movie that is Dawn of the Dead, because they're all stuck in a mall.
Quick note about that. I will say that part of what amuses me so much about this film is that down the line, every aspect of its premise doesn't make any sense. And I think that there's a certain self-awareness there that, like, obviously, these robots are ridiculous to have in a mall. Obviously, why on earth would a single Thunderbolt make these robots murderers? Everything about it makes no sense, and I think that's delightful.
Not to mention the fact that the mall is sealed by, like, military-grade blast doors at, what was it, midnight every night?
Yeah.
At midnight, literally, huge metal blast doors seal every exit to this mall. Which begs the question, if that happens, why do you have security bots on top of that?
Although, I will say, I think that the film, the intention was that the security bots, they hadn't been brought out yet. They were going to be brought out during store hours to stop crime.
I agree, yeah.
Potentially, yeah, that's potentially true. Well, let's talk a little bit about the other sort of weird premise, and sort of, this is a movie that definitely demands that you suspend your disbelief, because the other weird premise of this film is that they've all gathered after mall closed to have a party at, like, a mattress store.
Which, again, having
grown up in North... Like a sex party at a mattress store.
Which, again, having grown up in North Dakota, I don't see anything strange about.
Then you get the cast of characters. Specifically, what was the name of the guy who was chewing gum who got killed right away?
Oh, God, he was perfect.
Yeah, he was one of...
the douche that you could only find in the 80s.
He
Everything about him is just punchable. And I don't know how they exist only in the 80s, but every 80s movie is fine. And that guy was just flying colors. I can't believe he wasn't in more teen movies like that.
This film has a lot of great, like, one-dimensional stereotypes like that, because it also has the jerk janitor who's like,
if I ever find a little bastard that did this, it dead me.
And it has the, it has the restaurant donor who's this, like, thick Italian stereotype.
Oh, honey, you're breaking my heart. In America, porca miseria.
And of course, my personal favorite, which brings possibly the greatest moment in the entire film and possibly cinema history, is the extremely fat man who utters the best line in the film.
Waitress, more butter.
That's true. That is true. And that actually brings me to the next thing I wanted to talk about. As is traditional here on TerrorVision, we've each compiled a top three list. These lists are completely random and totally subjective and personal. And since you brought up that indelible line in cinema history, I'm just going to read my top three snatches of dialogue from Chopping Mall. So to start out, number three.
What's that? Robot blood.
Number two.
Fuck the fuchsia, it's Friday. Tell the old bag to wait.
And number one, again.
Waitress, more butter.
You did miss a few good lines, though. There is a...
It's good times to the max.
Is their description of how the evening is going to be. There's one character who refers to another as a...
real candidate for prickhood.
And a slime dog. And let's not forget...
Let's go send those fuckers a Rambogram.
Oh yeah. My god, that was great.
Just actually made me wish that Rambograms were real, because I'd send one.
Yeah.
Every Valentine's Day.
To everyone in the world.
And then another good line is a line that really kind of sets up the whole tone of the film, which is...
I guess I'm just not used to being chased around a mall in the middle of the night by killer robots.
And that's just the whole film in a nutshell.
It's really reasonable, I mean, because who is? Who is used to that? That's an uncommon situation.
Having grown up in North Dakota, my list, unfortunately, is very redundant. Mine was the three best lines of dialogue, in my opinion, that had nothing to do with what was going on screen. Which is after, when the nerdy, macho nerdy character and the last living girl are almost killed and they're compadres are killed. He turns to her after his friend and watches friends die brutally in front of him and says,
"Let's go find that computer."
Because a very long time ago, they had mentioned something about finding a computer to shut the machines down. The other one was when one of the macho characters shot into the air to attract the robots, and one came around the corner and they zoom on his face and he goes,
"That didn't take very long."
Because that's not very clever. And then, unfortunately, as I said, it's a little bit redundant. Number one is introducing this Italian stereotype character, introducing our hot babe character as a you know, disgruntled waitress at this mall, and then cutting ever so unimportantly to a fat man who says,
"Waitress, more butter."
I really wanted the Easter egg of this movie to just be that guy naked smearing butter all over himself, completely out of context.
I mean, then it's clear what he needed more butter for.
Right. Something
to become more fat.
I know. Well, that was what bothered me. It also, you of course, ruined my top three because that was my number one.
But I mean, and that's not such a bad thing because completely independently, we've all arrived at the one moment of undeniable gold in this film.
my top three was the top three scene cuts. And these are the lines that were said right before it cut to a different scene. coming in at number three is the douche guy and the douche girl kissing each other, going,
"Hi.
Hi.
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 Hi. Oh, hello."
And you watch them just like really close to kiss. It's just really uncomfortable, and it was a scene cut. Number two, similar to Ben's, but most of it was...
"Computer, huh? Let's go trash the fucker."
For two reasons. One, because he's a computer, huh? Like, you had to think, I was like, oh yeah, there's a computer, that's really weird. And then, let's go crash the fucker. I think at that time, crashing computers is like, oh wow, crash, it's kind of cool. But it's become so common to say crash computer, it doesn't sound cool at all. And then, of course, number one, waitress more butter for the incredibly fat man, who was eating pizza, so I don't know why he needed butter.
So, are you saying that all three of our lists end with Waitress More Butter?
As a number one.
Yeah. Okay, I guess I should go ahead and
four out of four Terrorvision contestants agree that Waitress More Butter is the recommended line from Chopping Mall. I said contestants.
I'm going to go ahead and do my list and Maddie's list. She wasn't able to make it this evening, but she was there and she left her list. My list is the top three names of stores in the background of Chopping Mall. Number three, House of Almonds.
That's good.
Number two, Licorice Pizza. And of course, number one, the Martin Lawrence Galleria.
The Martin Lawrence Galleria. That's classic.
Yeah.
Which, did Martin Lawrence the celebrity exist at that time? I don't think he did.
I don't know if that's
the
relevant.
Celebrity.
And then Maddie has her top three, which is the top three moments that were in the trailer that should have been in the film. Number one, you have a girl screaming with a much more menacing robot in the background than the ones that are actually in the film as a robot claw approaches her neck. Number two, you have a robot silhouette holding a severed head. Nothing like this happens in the film. And number three, you have a robot dragging a severed arm of a shopper which is still clutching its shopping bag. Which kind of goes to the whole thing about how the advertising of the film tries to make it seem kind of much more gruesome than it is, because also the poster is a robot hand holding a bag filled with guts and eyeballs.
I have a feeling
that would have been more fun.
I have a feeling that this movie was finished in the can, and they're trying to figure out how to market it. They shot about 2 minutes of footage on a studio back lot with some leftover gore parts and whatever they had lying on hand, and then spliced that into the trailer, hoping that people wouldn't remember that the trailer had nothing to do with the film that they actually saw.
Yeah, because also the trailer... It says that the story goes that they break into the mall and then are stalked by the robots. When in actuality, they work at the mall. It blatantly lies about the content of the film. It's worse than Camp Nowhere.
It goes a step farther. It has the janitor saying, "You fuckers are dead meat." It implied to me that there was other people robbing the mall, like serious criminals in there, that then trapped them in there. And for some reason, Killer Robots got involved, and it only like seemed like Killer Robots were part of a house of horrors that they encounter, because there's a scene where the girl breaks into a pet shop and has snakes and other rats climbing around, and that plays a prominent role in the trailer. So you're expecting creatures, robots, killer, you know, crazy dudes that they should never have broken into this chopping mall. And that's no, they just wanted to fuck at a mattress store, and robots.
And
came
honestly,
out and
can you blame them?
No, God no, God no.
But actually, you raise a good point, Ben, because the one genuinely, even mildly frightening moment in the film comes when the lead actress is hiding from a robot at a pet store, and tarantulas and snakes are crawling all over her. Which just goes to show you that, like, 2 seconds of footage of actually genuinely creepy things outclass the entire, you know, 70 minutes of shitty robots wheeling around unable to go up escalators in a shopping mall.
I do think that, you know, I do defend the robots and their place in the film and the film's general horror level, but I do believe, intentional or not, that they are the least terrifying villains in possibly the whole history of movie making.
They're almost Dalek-like.
There's an episode of The Outer Limits in which sentient tumbleweeds attack people, and the sentient tumbleweeds are more terrifying than these robots.
I've seen that episode, and I agree.
So just to put things in perspective. Now, let me posit this to you guys. Would this movie be better if it were more like the trailer? If the movie had been about a gang of criminals breaking into a mall whose heist plans go horribly awry.
Or kids breaking the mall that happened upon, like, a violent group of criminals. I think absolutely. I think it'd been more fun. I agree with you, Toby, that there's a lot of fun going on in this movie. There's all this crazy, like you said, the crazy shopping mall names in the background, the ridiculous guns in the store, on and so forth. But there's a lack of, you know, we've already said are some great lines. There's a lack of one-liners, though. The robots kill everybody and say, "Have a nice day," and then they say, "Have a nice day," when they kill them back. They're repeating the same thing over and over again. There's stuff like, "Well, that didn't take very long," when they shoot to try and attract the robots. There's a billion opportunities for terrible Sean Connery, James Bond-esque lines about killing people here. Shoving spears through them and saying, "I think they got the point," and I want that throughout the whole movie. Not the characters are distinguishable.
I disagree.
They're all like a level of douchey. The nerdy kid's a little bit more nerdy. But that's it.
You have douche jock, you have cool rockers, and you have nerds. It's three completely separate groups.
I did not. The rockers and the douche jocks did not separate to me. No, in all seriousness, in movies like Monster Squad, they're completely separate from me. I distinguish every character. And here I
I will say this for the film, in sort of in defiance of horror movie tropes, the actors or the characters in this movie are actually wicked clever. You know, in most horror movies, they split up, they do retarded things.
Yeah.
They're their own worst enemies. In this movie, they're incredibly smart. They make plans. They craft elaborate traps for these robots. They immediately go to the sporting goods store, arm themselves heavily, take propane tanks, which they use as impromptu explosives. They set a flame trap in an elevator. I mean, these are not stupid people. They do all the right things.
And they still get chopped in that mall.
Are killed anyway, which is an interesting take. Which is an interesting take on the genre. But the only stupid character is Susie who is crawling through the vents, but the vents get too hot, so she just jumps out and is immediately murdered.
And that's fine. She's one character. It's kind
of
cool.
But as for the rest of them, they're shockingly competent.
But,
for a bunch of people boning at a mattress store after midnight at a shopping mall.
The people look like they're like 25, so I don't know why they needed to bone in a store. Don't they have houses?
Listen,
like,
man, it's all about variety.
Don't knock until you've done it.
I will say
there were two actors that were left over from Terrorvision, right? Like the Terrorvision movie.
Yes.
No, there's one. That's true.
That's a good point.
The dad from Terrorvision appears briefly as a security guard, and the mom from Terrorvision, Mary Warrenov, apparently queen of 80s camp cinema,
and gums
appears at the beginning with another guy. And I looked into this; they both co-star as the main characters in another. Relatively well-liked cult film called Eating Raoul, which we haven't seen yet, but it's not just that they are bringing back those actors, it's those characters from the film Eating Raoul giving a cameo in character, and adding something to that, I recently watched Valley Girl, and there is a appearance of an ad of Eating Raoul, so apparently we need to see that film.
That's awesome.
They're like the dynamic duo of the 80s. It makes you wonder about their relationship, both professional
and
personal.
Remember when I was saying I couldn't recognize where that dad was from, and I looked it up, and for all the fans out there who really want to look into it, he also played Principal Pankow in Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
That's where we know him from.
The Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
That is exactly where we know him from.
I couldn't even believe it.
Going back a bit to what Ben was saying, Ben was arguing that there's a lack of quotable lines in the film, which I don't say that there's a lack of quotable lines in the film, because there are more lines here that I'll quote than 90% of films that I'll see. But I will say that the film does kind of lose, I wouldn't say it loses traction, but it becomes a little bit less funny in the second half and focuses a bit more on the kind of action suspense element, which is absolutely a problem. It loses a bit of its comedy level and starts to briefly dances with being a legitimate serious drama thing where they'll be arguing with each other about their plans and all that stuff, and it's like, I don't want to see these guys argue. I don't want to see some stupid downtime with them having a schism with each other. That's not why I'm here. Luckily, that section of the film was pretty brief.
It was like 20 seconds long.
Yeah.
Actually. Also, you defend the robots as being throwbacks to the 1950s robots of yore, but the problem is that they have these bizarre hands that are sort of always up in the air looking like they're going to pinch something. They look like T-Rex hands in comparison to the rest of their bodies. And their only real weapon, well, they have a few, but their main weapon is a laser, which, by the way, is incredibly inconsistent with how powerful it is. At one point, just sort of blasts off someone, like a little bit of someone's clothes. And at one point, one blast explodes a head a la Scanners.
Yeah,
but
you've got to think they were still working the kinks out on the potency of those lasers.
But the problem is that if you try and do these, like, seemingly harmless robots of yore, you can't do it for the 77-minute runtime. It's because there's so many scenes of people running away from boring looking robots in a hallway, which can be funny and amusing even for the first 20 minutes. But I think you should have done more in a feature length movie. Maybe it's because of my preference for creature features, but I would like them see them turn into larger robots, form a giant robot, morph into a tall, you know, a robot that stands with different guns, different features, I don't know what. But you gave me the same thing the whole time.
I totally agree.
I like those monsters, though. Robots were an interesting take.
I totally agree.
I think we can talk about ones.
I definitely agree with Ben that monsters are kind of inherently a more interesting thing to view than robots. However, I don't agree with Ben saying, oh no, it's so much suffering over the 77-minute runtime. It's like, the movie's 77 minutes long.
It
never is boring. It just, I mean, I was there's nothing that's not entertaining for the full 77 minutes. I think 77 minutes is exactly the perfect length for these villains.
I want the villains to do more.
But there's only so many characters. So when something happened, like when a character was thrown off and he just fell to his death, I go, oh, there's a perfectly good death you wasted.
Yeah,
like, they only have like six characters you could kill, and I want each one to really mean it. So when some guy just gets electrocuted, or some guy just falls off a thing, I go, oh, my, you know, couldn't you cut off his arm and feed it to him or something? Like, I want, you only have six, make them count.
And there's only one, as I mentioned before, there's only one good death in the whole film, which is the exploding head.
And just make the robots change, make them adapt, because you're fighting the same damn robots the whole time. You have, what was there, five or four of them? I can't.
There were three. There's one for each floor.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we defeated the one. What are we going to do? Oh, it's the exact same robot. You know, in something like Tremors, the Graboids get smarter each time. They learn more. First one dies easy, and the second one, like, he won't take the dynamite when you try and feed it to him. He'll spit back and try and blow you up. And that makes no sense, but it's awesome. Why aren't the robots adapting and becoming smarter as we speak and, like, making them all, you know, manipulating them all or something like that?
That's true. That would make the film better.
There's some missed potential here. But what have we learned to close? What lessons can we draw from Chopping Mall?
That Chopping Mall really hates glass. Like, a lot.
It's that my lesson for the film is that movie scores have only gotten worse since 1986, because this film has one of the greatest scores of all time.
You're so right.
Horeb, thoughts?
What's your lesson?
You know, I would say that, you know, you can be a certain level of douche, but once you reach a certain level, that's when you're going to die, because the huge ones, they died right away. The other ones were just like, oh, okay, and then as they went on, they got more and more prickish, and then that's when they died. And the only two people who survived were the nerdy guy, and I guess she's supposed to be a nerdy girl, but she was way too much of a fox for me to think that.
She was very polite.
The lesson I drew is that you can chew gum and make out at the same time, apparently, with no real consequences. Well, I'm gonna play us out, as it were, with a few more titles from Jim's more recent career in exploitation video. Here's a couple more movies he's directed since Chopping Mall came out. Hard Bounty, The Bear Wench Project, The Witches of Brestwick, The Da Vinci Co-ed, House on Hooter Hill, and, that's a pretty good one. That's a good one.
What about The Bear Wench Project? You say that one?
The Bear Wench Project,
and
yep.
And its sequels.
And its sequels, The Bear Wench Project, The Final Chapter, and The Bear Wench Project 3, Nymphs of Mystery Mountain, Bear Wench Project 2, Scared Topless, as well as the long-running Busty Cop series, which I believe is on 4 or 5 installments at this point.
But Mamma Mia, you know, for such a breast-based filmography, I will say that there could have been more breasts in the film.
Could have been more.
There are about 3... brief glimpses of some fairly withered teats in this film.
There's some almost boobs towards the beginning. Later on, there's a giant fuck fest, which is great, but kind of ends when the robots come and try and kill them.
So there's
some boobs you want to see, and you don't see them. You show them like the consolation prize breasts.
Yeah, you only see the boobs you were never interested in seeing in the first place.
Yeah.
Shoot, because we don't get to see Kelly Maroney's breast in the film.
No,
right?
not at all.
That's a damn shame.
Also, why aren't the robots creepily sexual and trying to take the girl's clothes off?
Ben,
it probably says more about me than the film.
That's an extremely strange suggestion.
Ben, this is not the film that you wanted it to be. I think we can just accept that at this point and move on.
He did make the films that I wanted to be from 1990 on, apparently.
Right,
though.
Yeah. So you just need to stick with his late career filmography, I think, Mr. Hansen. So let's just... From that, Ben, despite your disappointment with, I understand you felt like you were getting one thing, didn't get it. What's your final star rating for this movie?
I would have given it a 2. Toby is arguing me up to a 2.5.
Yeah!
Toby?
I'm giving it the full 3. I think that at 77 minutes and so much fun, it's impossible to not recommend this film to anybody. Because, I mean, you sit down with some friends, it comes, it goes, it's a lot of fun. Come on!
I guess I'm a little more discerning. I'm going to give it 2 stars for a lot of missed opportunities, but I will argue that it is a film well worth watching at least once.
I'll give it 3, and the reason I'm going to give it 3 is because I thought it was a little bit... because I gave Terrorvision 2.5. This is a little better than Terrorvision. It was short. It was to the point. There was things I thought they could have done better, but it wasn't like it was bad. It's like, you know, a meatloaf. I mean, it's got all the stuff I want in it. You could add more, but I'm still happy with it.
Yeah, it's it's absolutely better than Terrorvision.
You're right. It is a better movie than Terrorvision, but I agree with Alex. There's a lot of missed opportunities despite a short length and a potent concept.
See, I don't think it's a better movie than Terrorvision, honestly. One reason, and it's a one-word reason, Spiro. There's no Spiro in Chopping Mall, and that costs it at least one star. All right, gentlemen, do we have a wrap?
All right. To play us out, here is something from Chopping Mall.
Ha ha ha.